is Will Tinkin.
Thanks for listening to the Bitter Comics Podcast. And here's your host, JT Foreman.
Good job, dude. Can I have a high five?
Yes.
Good job. That's really nice. Hello, I am JT Foreman, and welcome to episode 75 of Bitter Comics. I'm here with my good friend, Danny.
Hi.
Lynch.
Hello.
Hi, Danny. How's it going, dude?
I am quite amazing.
You are quite amazing. And it's an amazing evening here with Danny Mitch. So we begin once again with our opening segment. JT was a real prick last week, in which I apologize for the cruel, offensive, and probably racist things that I said last episode. This is episode 75, so for my insensitivity in episode 74, I would like to apologize to black people, hungry people, TK's sister, vacuum cleaners, Hanford, and the calendar.
What did you say about Tiffany?
Tiffany? Is that her name?
Yes.
Well, see, there's one thing is I can't remember her name.
Okay, it's Tiffany. What did you say about Tiffany?
That's the only sister he has? Because I want to make sure I'm talking about the correct one.
Zenwalk?
Yes.
Yes, that's Tiffany.
That's where I saw her the last time.
Okay.
A few months ago. The first time she was mad that night because I did not remember her from the first time she and I met, which was over 2 years before. And I just talked about the incident on the last episode that happened. She's mad at me that I didn't remember her, and even though we had met once over 2 years earlier. And she's like, but you asked me out. Did you say yes? No, she said no. I said, well, then why would I bother remembering it? But so anyway, yeah. Listen to episode 74 if you're interested in why I'm apologizing. Actually, if you're interested in why I'm apologizing to any of these things, check out episode 74 at bittercomics.podbean.com.
You could actually be TK's brother-in-law at this point.
I guess that would have been a possibility.
Yeah.
I like raisins. Anyway, that would be creepy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. I probably wouldn't talk to you anymore, really, some point. Now, really? Well, actually, I like Tiffany. I talked to Tiffany, so I talked to Tiffany, who's TK's sister. So I guess I would talk to TK's brother-in-law.
Honestly, that is the only sister he has.
I don't know. I don't try to go out of my way to find anything out about him.
Okay. Well, I don't. Okay. Well, then I have to say that I don't know for sure if it was Tiffany because
if she's the waitress at Zenwalk.
No, she's not a waitress at Zenwalk.
Okay, then no, that's not Tiffany.
Okay. Well, it was TK's sister, but it was not. She was not a waitress. She was there at Zenwalk one night when I was doing a show, and she came in and heckled me and then was mad at me that I did not remember her from the time we had met once before, over 2 years earlier.
Sounds like Tiffany, though.
Okay, well, yeah. I don't think that was Tiffany. But you know what? I don't remember this girl's name. I just do remember her saying that she was TK's sister. Where was I? Oh, yeah. If you'd like to subscribe to our podcast, just go to the website bittercomics.podbean.com. Scroll down a little bit, and on the right-hand side of the page, there are buttons you can click on to subscribe using iTunes, Google, or My Yahoo. And if you feel I owe any additional apologies or to make any comments, send us an email to bittercomics@hotmail.com. And in the subject line, please put, any woman nice enough to blow you should never be called a bitch.
How many emails have you received?
One.
Okay.
It was a dude from Texas telling us we were being too hard on the black guy, John Jones.
Oh, yeah. Yes. John Jones is able to defend himself.
Well, you know, if a dude from Texas is telling you to be nicer to the black guy, then you probably need to be nicer to the black guy.
Maybe.
Either that or you need to be nicer to Texas.
No, I lived in Texas for like 8 years.
What'd you think? Where in Texas did you live?
Midland, Texas.
Midland.
The home of Heroes, the TV show Heroes, took place. Many of the parts of it took place in Midland, Texas.
Where is Midland?
It is in between, it's the middle ground between Houston and Dallas. That's why it's called Midland.
Okay.
And, what other show? Friday Night Lights, the movie, took place in Midland, Texas.
I thought that was Odessa.
Yeah, same thing. It's like saying Fresno, Clovis.
Oh, okay.
It's the same thing as saying Midland, Odessa.
Oh, okay.
It's the same town.
Oh, I lived in Houston for about a year and a half. I did like it. I have to say that I've never been anywhere where the people were prouder of where they're from than when I was in Texas. Did you see Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure?
Yes, I did.
Okay. You remember when he's calling home and he says, I'm in Texas?
Yes.
And
everybody claps.
Yeah. The stars at night are big and bright. Bum, bum, bum,
bum. Deep in the heart of Texas. Texas. Yeah, yes. Everyone.
Well, I was at an Astros game, and George Bush Sr. Happened
the good one.
To be there. And he during the seventh inning stretch, he picks up the, you know, goes over the PA system, and he says, the stars at night are big and bright. And then 35,000 people
clapped.
Clapped the... Deep in the heart of Texas.
See, which is better than if his son would have done it. He would have said, the brights are stars, so big and night. What? Oh, huh? Sorry. What?
And then they would say, wasn't he born in Connecticut?
Yeah.
Yes, he was. He was born in the Northeast somewhere.
You might, the
Connecticut
most,
or Massachusetts or something?
I don't know.
He was not really a Texan.
Here's the thing. The most unappreciated job probably in the country during that administration was probably the script writer for George W. Bush.
Yeah, but you know what? The easiest job in the country was his fact checker.
Yeah.
So anyway, Danny, thanks a lot for coming to do the show. I appreciate it.
Well, you're going to give me a ride, so I mean,
yeah, sure. I'm going to give you a ride home afterwards. You actually wanted to go home now, but I'm like, no, you're going to have to do my podcast.
No, then I was like, if you give me
either that or you blow me, and you're like, well, yeah. You've been eating a lot of celery, so your loads are bigger than normal.
Really?
So,
is that what does it? Celery? Well,
I out of curiosity, I heard an interview with Peter North, and he's like famous for his large loads.
Uh huh.
And
the porn star Peter North.
So I was like, Peter North, and he said in the interview that he has a special diet. But he didn't say on the interview what his special diet was. So I was like, Google, Peter North diet, enter. And I found this thing. It didn't say it was from Peter North, but there was a list of things that you should eat if you want to have a large load. And one of the things it said was eat a lot of celery.
Well, see, I have a problem with celery because I used to be followed by that vegetable. It used to look in through my windows late at night, call me at all hours of the night.
Oh, yeah.
Finally called the cops. Oh, and they said, there's nothing we can do. Celery can stalk.
Yeah, celery can stalk.
Food humor, that's what I do.
Yes, yes, he does. Yeah. He does do food humor.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. You're like one pea in a pod.
Yeah.
So anyway, celery can stalk.
Yes.
But, yeah, so apparently eating a lot of celery gives you large loads, which...
which helps with stalking, too, really, at some point.
Yeah, it does. It does. Well, It also noted on that the post in that forum that it will cause you to have noxious gas. Apparently, I don't know that this is true, but apparently I hear vegetarians will have really bad gas.
Yes.
Why?
It's because they're evil people, and it's the it's the horribleness leaking through them because they think they're better than you because they won't eat a cheeseburger.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know what? Me eating a cheeseburger, I don't think that's any worse than a lion stalking a gazelle.
Except that you don't put the same amount of effort into getting a gazelle.
I don't know that that's true. Yeah. I think just that our efforts within our society have become specialized. I'm not hunting the burger, but I am working and then trading the money I get from my labor for the burger. And, you know, because, like, how many people in this world do their job for themselves?
Not me.
Nobody. Yeah. Nobody does their job for themselves. No matter what.
Well, that's not true. I would say 2% of the entire population do the job that they want to do for themselves.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean, like, okay, the work that you do as a stand-up comedian or at the grocery store.
Right.
How much of that work is actually for you? Well, none of it is.
Really?
The standing on stage and doing jokes, you may enjoy it, but it's not for you, it's for the audience.
Right.
You know, stocking the shelves and selling the groceries at the grocery store, only a very tiny bit of that is actually for you when you go grocery shopping.
Absolutely.
You know, the stuff that you put on the shelves is there, and now so that little bit of it is for you. But 99.9% of the work that you do is for other people. And that's the same for everyone. Everyone does their job, their work, benefits other people. In exchange, you get money, which you trade for the fruits of other people's labor. I don't see money as a thing. In my opinion, money is a system of measurement. It's like, you know, a cup or a fluid ounce. You know, it's not an actual thing. You have to, you know, you have paper money as the actual physical thing. But is there any real difference other than the arrangement of the molecules between a $100 bill and a $1 bill? Well, no. It's the same ink is on there. It's just put in different places. You know, so the money is not what it physically is.
So we're getting into physics.
What it represents is what it's
worth. Of the atomic structure of bills.
So if you could just move the ink around somehow.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, we don't need to. We probably lost both of our listeners already.
Yeah, I think no, the one guy with the glasses is still listening.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's me though.
Oh, that's true.
So we just came from a show.
No, a great show.
How you did great.
I got
there just as you were coming out of the room.
Right.
But I do remember the thunderous applause.
Yeah. Well, you know, and here's the thing. With comedy, everybody gets their night.
That's true. I've had great shows and I've had not so great shows.
And I'm the same way. I've done three shows in a row. The last three, actually, I gave one of my shows away to my fiance. But over the past three shows, I've had good shows.
Yeah.
But there's always that one person that does the show. You know, there's the one guy that cracks the room.
Yeah.
And tonight was my night. And I'm not, I used to be real humble about that and that kind of stuff, but yeah. I've been through it enough times to see that it's not always going to be me. So I know tonight was my night.
Yeah. Yeah.
And next week it'll be another comedian's night.
Yeah.
And I enjoy seeing the crowd enough to crack on whatever comedian it is.
Yeah.
That they're enjoying the show, that it doesn't matter. Believe me, if it could be me every time, I would yeah. probably have it be me every time. But
well, it's something Louis C.K. said. Someone, I don't remember who was speaking to him when he said this, but the person said to Louis C.K., you know, you're the best comedian in the country. And he says, yeah, right now. But that's not going to last forever.
No.
And you know what? There's been many people. At one time, I'd say Dennis Miller was probably one of the greatest comics in the country.
Yeah,
back in the 80s for a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, for a period of time, Chris Rock was the best comic in the country. And then someone else is.
Yeah.
Know? But he was certainly the most popular,
if not the best. And that's the thing. It's the general consensus.
Yeah.
And tonight, I got the general consensus of the room.
You know, it happens to different people on different nights.
You know, my style of comedy, I understand, is not going to hit everybody every night.
Yeah.
But what I'm shooting for is that 95% of the time I go up, I have a good set. Not a set like I had tonight.
Yeah.
I would like it to be that every night, but I want it to be, I've been doing it enough to realize that I'm not going to have that every night.
Have you ever had a show that went so good that there were jokes you knew weren't funny, but they still got laughs?
Yes. And see, yeah. Here's my thing. Like I was talking to another local comedian, Kevin Tinkin, and he had a bad set. And he was like, I'm used to killing. I said, here's the thing. You don't learn anything from killing.
Yeah.
You don't. You don't learn anything from a set where you have the crowd. They love you. You're not going to do anything wrong because you don't know what's actually really working. Because sometimes when you get a crowd right at the beginning, they like you so much, they let you get away with anything.
Yeah.
And you've got them for the rest of the show. Their personality type fits with your personality type. You're done.
Yeah.
And when you die on stage, I really don't think you learn that much either. Because then you have so much self-loathing at the end of the show and so much doubt. And so you almost want to give up a lot.
It's when you struggle and you finish off okay.
You have to work at it.
Yeah.
When it's got the peaks and the valleys, and then you can go back and look and go, okay, where was I funny here? Where did I lose them? Where did I bring them back? And then you get into the process of writing, which is the most important part of being a stand-up comedian, is, hey, okay, I lost them here. Why did I lose them here? And then you look back at it and go, that's why.
Yeah.
And then you try it again. And I like the show. I don't like them as much as killing. Of course, I'd like to kill every time.
Yeah, yeah.
But the shows I learn the most from are the ones with peaks and valleys.
Yeah, yeah. On that note, we're going to take a break real quick. I'm JT Foreman here with my good friend Danny the Minch. The Minch.
Not to be confused with the Greg Wilson.
We're the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back. Who's Greg Wilson? This is JT Foreman here with my good friend Danny the Minch.
Hi.
We're back. All right. So as we left for the break, I asked you a question. Who's Greg Wilson?
It's not Greg Wilson. It's the Greg Wilson.
The Greg Wilson.
The Greg Wilson.
Just like the Minch, is the Greg Wilson.
Well, actually, I would prefer it to be the Danny Minch. I would like to call myself in the third person, the Danny Minch.
Wait, time out. What's his name? From the Charlie's Angels movie, Tom Green.
The Chad.
The Chad.
The Chad, yes. The Chad.
So he stole his name.
Pretty much. Basically. Actually, what happened was on America's Got Talent, the Greg Wilson was performing, and it turns out he took one of the jokes from the warm-up comedian of the crowd and did it verbatim.
He stole a joke from his opener?
Actually, not even his opener. He was not even his paid opener. He was the guy to warm up the crowd for everybody.
That's
basically.
Lame. Wow, that's horrible.
And then was called out on it by Howie Mandel, who's been in the industry for quite a long time, knows the rules of comedy. And honestly, the Greg Wilson has been in the business long enough to know better. Oh. And was given many outs and did not take him. And he was actually put on to the next round because of his performance by the other judges.
Despite the fact that that
despite
happened.
The fact that he, the warm-up comedian, threw such a fit that they disqualified him, which I would have been that guy too. And here's the thing,
you know,
there are a lot of similar premises, but this premise was so unique and so spot on. It wasn't even a word premise; it was a miming premise.
Well, any other art form where there's writing involved, if you take someone else's words, they get to sue you for plagiarism. Thank you. How come that doesn't get to happen in stand-up comedy? I never understood that.
Here's probably the reason, because there is no money given for a physical form of written literature. Whereas if you are selling a carton of books that you didn't actually write, somebody else wrote them, then you have a physical aspect that you sold somebody, and then that's fraud. But
So here's what we need to do. Every time you write a new joke, you need to write it down and then sell it to me for a penny.
Right.
And then every time I come up with a new joke, I'll write it down. I'll sell it to you for a penny.
So hey, I'm not going to pay a penny for your stuff. I'm sorry.
You pay a lot more for other things.
Oh,
mine,
believe
so.
Me. But here's the thing. Everybody makes mistakes.
Well, yeah, that is true. That is true.
And I've been in the comedy business long enough, and not very long, but long enough to know that a lot of guys come up with the same premises.
Well, we are all drawing from the same reality.
Exactly. And unless you go completely outside the box, there are very few guys that do that, like a Stephen Wright, that you know he's not taking from anybody.
I have no doubt that Stephen Wright is not taking from anybody, but I don't think that his, and I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
I love his stuff. But I don't think his material is as outside of the box as everyone says, as people seem to, or as you're implying.
Well, you know, the mainstream stuff, but if you hear some of his
obscure it's entirely humor, possible that I'm not as familiar with all of his material as you are. But, you know, I just think of some of his, some of the jokes of his that I can think of off the top of my head.
Are clever, but not.
They are very much like, saw a sign that said rest stop 21 miles. That's pretty big.
Yeah.
You know, what he did was a trick.
A mathematical joke, right.
He did a trick that I do in jokes where he took the wrong definition for a word.
Which is what I do.
Yeah, and I do that as well.
But you have to really listen to it. He does a thing on doing a time travel bit with going on to his answering machine, which answering machines are not even used anymore, basically. Yeah. But on his answering machine, that gets so convoluted at one point, it's hard to keep up with. But when it gets to the end, the whole thing makes an amazing sense. Even though it makes no sense at all. And I know that does.
Yeah. But no, I think I understand. A lot of people are probably more of a genius than I would give them credit for.
And here's the thing. It's what style of comedy are you going to do? And believe me, I am a fan of all forms of comedy. If you're an observational comedian and you do it well, I'm a fan of it. If you're...
I like puns. I like fart jokes. Yeah. I like food humor. Like the blue comic.
Yeah. Is but here's comics, the thing.
All that stuff. I like all of that stuff.
Once you get into your groove, your brain starts thinking that way all the time. As a matter of fact, a lot of comedians will come up to me when they're around me because of the style of comedy I do and go, "That's a Danny Minch joke."
Yeah.
It's not a Danny Minch joke. It's a play on words.
Yeah.
It's misdirection. But it's not a Danny Minch joke. It's you thought of that and put it into a category that relates to you, which is me.
Yeah.
And then you gave it a name.
Yeah.
But it was 100% your joke. And here's the thing with Greg Wilson, the joke he took was so obscure.
Do you remember offhand what it was?
The guy does a joke where it's completely pantomime. It's about a man and woman having a fight in a car. And he does the role of the man.
Okay.
And then he does the role of the woman. And here's the thing. There's no wording to the whole thing. The buildup is all words. But the rest of it's pantomime. Him just sitting there and mimicking the facial features and the gait of both the man and the woman in the middle of this fight. And it's hilarious. It was done mime for mime. By the Greg Wilson. And here's my thing. I have actually, as comedians, we don't always pay 100% attention to the comedian that's up on stage. Me and you have been in the back of the room talking while the other guys have been off stage. And the only time we really listen to a comedian is when they come up with something new. Yeah. When then all of a sudden we're because we hear their stuff all the time.
I've seen you and I've seen Terry Michaels and
anybody you've worked with.
I've seen 20, 30, 40 times.
So you kind of tone them out.
Yeah.
This happened with Richard Villa. I unwittingly took a joke from him, and I almost used it in front of him. But a heckler spoke up. I was at Crossroads. A heckler spoke up, and I went into the heckler, and I spent the next 5 minutes on the heckler, so I never finished the joke because the joke was done.
Yeah.
You know, and I never got to the punch. Then Richard, who I was hosting for, got up, did the joke word for word that I was just about to do. And when he got off stage, I walked up and I said, "Richard, I am so sorry. I have been doing that joke for 3 months. I must have heard you do it, and I thought I came up with the premise." Because I had worked with Richard before, but like I said, we were in the back of the room a lot. And Richard looked at me and goes, "Did it kill?" And I go, "Yeah, it did really well." He goes, "Are you ever going to use it again?" I was like, "Well, hell no, I'm not going to use it again." And he goes, "Well, then I'm a pretty good comedian. I killed when I wasn't even in the room."
Well, see, he's got a good attitude about it. So that's good.
Well, told me, here's a little interesting fact. He, and I never thought of this concept before, but he does comedy a lot.
Yeah.
And he brings up a lot of new comedians. And some of them only have a good 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But he wants to book them for shows where they're doing 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And some of them will say, "Hey, can I borrow some of your act?" And he says to his friends, "You can borrow that, but when somebody comes up after the show and says, 'Hey, that's a Richard Villa joke,' you say, 'Yeah, it is. He let me borrow that joke.'"
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and because he's got a lot of young comedians and he's working them up, and I was one of them.
Yeah.
And when he was that gracious to me, I never used that joke again. It was a great joke too, and it was one of those jokes that always got a hit.
Yeah.
And it was a go-to, "Hey, I'm losing the crowd. I'm going to throw this one out there." Bam, I got him back. And he could see how distraught I was. And I didn't even use the joke in front of him. The second time I did it was I had worked with Flip Schultz for 5 days at Heroes of Comedy. Same thing.
Yeah.
I had heard him the first couple of days, toned him out. And it was a real simple joke about Scooby-Doo. And I used it many times. It turns out a lot of comedians have actually used this premise. But I was doing a show with Flip a few years later. And he said, hey, what kind of group is this? Can I do some weed humor? And I was like, hey, let me go up and do a weed joke that I have. And if it hits, then you know if you can do it or not. And he's like, oh, good. Turned out that was his joke. Now, here's the thing.
Well, I guess I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If I was stealing his joke purposely,
yeah,
I would have never picked that joke.
Yeah, that's true.
And I apologized publicly. I went on Facebook. I went on everything and said, look, I did this. I am sorry. And he didn't even ask me to. I was like, I was called out.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I had done it.
Yeah.
But when I was called out on it, unlike the Greg Wilson, when I was called out on it, I was like, oh, my God, I am so sorry. I had no idea. You know, I will never do that joke again.
Yeah.
And I have never done that joke again.
Well, the one time I can think of offhand where that kind of thing, I know there have been a couple of other incidents where I did a joke that was someone else's. And when I realized, I did it once and I was, oh, wait, no, that was so-and-so's. And I never did it again. But one, I had this bit where I'd say my girlfriend stuffs her bra. So the first time I got to second base, I found out the bases were loaded. And it's extremely similar to a Wendy Lieben joke where she says that she stuffs her bra. So the first time, if you get to second base with her, you will find out that the bases are loaded.
Right.
And, you know, I'd been doing the joke for a few months, and then I bought an album that had a set from her on it, and I heard her do the joke on the album, and I felt like crap. A couple weeks later, she was headlining. This was when I was living up in Seattle. She was headlining at Giggles Comedy Club, and I went up to her before the show, and I apologized. I told her, I'm sorry about this. I didn't know it was your joke. I did write it on my own, but you've been doing it longer than me, obviously, so this is your joke, so I won't ever do it again. And she told me, she asked me, did you actually write the joke or did you take it? And I said, well, I actually wrote the joke, but you wrote that before I did. And she said, well, if you actually wrote it, then go ahead and keep doing it and don't worry about it, because that happened between me and Steve Martin once.
Wow. And see, I had a similar situation with another comedian where I have a joke. It's the Axe body spray joke.
Have you ever been in the audience and watched someone else do your joke?
Yes,
that happened to me a number of times.
That happened to me word for word for a joke, and it was a young comedian, and I was somebody I respect a lot.
Yeah.
And it's actually happened to me twice. But to that young comedian, I walked up to because it was so apparent that he was doing my joke that the other comedians were jumping up and pointing at me, going, "He just stole your joke." And you know what? It's a joke that I don't do that much anymore.
Yeah.
Because I feel weird about the whole situation. It's the Pinocchio joke.
I don't remember it.
Okay. Down to the very last line, he must have heard me do it. And then the same thing. Because he's never used the joke again, yeah, to his credit. And I'm not going to mention the comedian's name. It was a total accident.
Yeah.
But I do a joke where I talk about inventing a sex doll that is of a 5-year-old boy.
Oh, okay. Sex doll for pedophiles.
Okay. Yeah, so they're not actually having sex with a real 5-year-old.
Those actually exist. That's a sad thing.
To me, it didn't exist when I wrote the joke. And I go through the genius, and the tagline at the end is a real hacky ending, yeah, where it's but the Catholic Church has already bought 5,000 of these things.
Yeah.
It's hacky, but it's my joke. I wrote that joke.
Yeah.
And then I go, but the remake of Pinocchio is going to be way different. Pinocchio is going to be like, no, I don't want to be a real little boy, not until you get rid of your pedophile. And the last line,
yeah,
and I'm going to give credit where credit is due. I was at a writer's session with Marcus Miranda.
Yeah.
I did that whole entire joke. He actually came up with the pedophile joke,
yeah,
the Geppettophile. And I asked him, can I have that?
Yeah.
And he said, yes, because I have nowowhere to put it in my act. Yeah. You can have. So that is actually the genius of Marcus Miranda, after hearing the rest of my set, saying you should put Geppettophile at the end of that. I did not write Geppettophile.
Yeah.
But it was in my act. The other guy did that word for word to the very down to the very part of pedophile. And when and to this day, me and him don't have the best relationship, but I know I respect his comedy. He respects my comedy, and it's not like, hey, I wasn't mad at him for doing it. I knew he was young in comedy, and you're a sponge. You take in as much as you can.
Yeah, and you hear things that you don't realize you're hearing.
Exactly.
Your ears don't turn off just because you're not turning around and facing the stage. So absolutely. You do hear the jokes. You might not realize you hear them, and then something sparks your memory later. And, oh, that's funny. And you write it down, and you think you just came up with a joke, when reality is it sparked your memory that you didn't realize you had.
And 99% of his comedy, except for that one joke that night, I found hilarious, and I knew was his material.
Yeah.
That one joke I knew was mine.
Yeah. Well, there's one guy in the comedy world who's made a really big thing out of calling out joke stealers.
Joe Rogan? Yeah, Joe Rogan. Yeah,
well, I want to talk about that when we come back from the break. I'm JT Foreman here with Danny Minch.
Danny Minch.
The Danny Minch.
Yeah.
We are the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back. This is JT Foreman. I am here with the Danny Minch.
Let's just call me Danny Minch from the rest of the show. Minch. Yeah,
we're the Bitter Comics, and we're back. All right. Okay. So we've been talking about joke stealing and stuff. I want to talk about Joe Rogan, but something occurred to me during the break. I want to bring up first, and I have mixed feelings about what something I did. This was 12, 13 years ago when I was living in Seattle, and should I say the person's name?
It's up to you. I mean,
let's see what.
Is it going to make any damaging?
No, you know what? It would be damaging to me, not her.
Okay, then if that's people absolutely think I'm wrong, fine.
They would be
damaging.
You know, this one of the few female comedians. There's not a lot of them out there, especially relatively speaking.
I mean, fucking one of them, but yeah. You
bastard. I want one. Damn it.
No, I'm sorry. I got mine.
There's a girl I knew when I was up in Seattle. Her name was Alicia Wood. Mm-hmm. And
would she?
Not with me.
Oh, well, that's saying a lot.
Not with me. Whether she would with other people, I have no idea. But she had this joke where she talked about. I don't remember if it was a dream or something where she'd go to the men's warehouse. And there's men's, they're on shelves in different categories, and you pick out the one you want. And I followed her on stage a couple of times during shows, and she closed with that. And I said, you know, I would like to find I like that joke about the men's warehouse. And I'd like to see a woman's warehouse, but then I realize that they do exist. They're just illegal in this state.
So, that's funny.
Okay, it's funny.
It's kind of a roasting.
It's kind of a roasting. And she was mad at me for stealing her joke idea.
Oh, no. See, you're giving an homage to the comedian that was on before you.
Yeah.
One of the biggest.
I did that joke two times. Both times I followed Alicia Wood on stage.
Right.
She was right before me. I went up after her. Those are the only two times I ever did that joke.
And where else would you use it? Really?
Pretty much. I think about that. And, you know, she also mentioned that she'd been trying to come up with a woman's warehouse version of
but she hadn't.
So, yeah, that's true. But it was a premise she was working in the middle of working on. I did not know that. But you know, so
well. Here's the thing: if you have a premise that you're in the middle of working on, and somebody else comes out with it first, you're done.
Mean, it's not like I've been working on a joke about dating, so you can't tell. It's not that. This is pretty specific, though.
That's true.
You know, so I never did. I never did the joke again. But she hated me forever after. At least I.
I felt like
she hated me after that.
Well, here's the thing. I find it when I go on and a comedian mentions one of my jokes on stage after I was on.
Yeah.
First off, how many comedians listen to the comedian that's been on stage before them?
Yes. Yes.
So to me, that's like, hey, that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's kind of a compliment.
To me, it's 100% of a compliment.
To me, I agree. That would
when
be a compliment.
And he gives an homage. To me, it's an homage. Hey, you know, I say something about blue, and then he gets on and says, blew something, and he throws something out there, and then kind of gives me a wink and a nudge. And everybody knows what's going on. Yeah. It's an inside joke that the whole audience gets. You do a callback
to another comedian's joke.
That's amazing.
That went up before you. Yeah.
Thank you. I
agree. I see that. I see that as a compliment.
Yeah. That is a compliment, especially when you're the feature or the opener and the headliner is mentioning you on their set.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you know what? It should happen more often.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, it's one thing that I really wish comics would watch the show more often.
Yeah. And I'm guilty of that, too. Yeah,
so am I. I absolutely am. Now, that's why I do understand. I mean, I've seen you 100 times.
Yes.
I've seen Terry Michaels.
You can do my set. Yes. I can do your set. I can do
your jokes. You can do my jokes. We know them. We know each other's act well.
I can actually go up on stage because Nate Fallon is such a... I love everything he does on stage.
Yeah.
I could probably do Nate Fallon's entire act and might have in the break room at work on occasion explaining to people who Nate Fallon is.
Yeah, yeah.
Not, okay, these are my jokes. No, I'm like, okay, there's this guy Nate Fallon. I got him on my show. Here's some of his stuff.
Yeah.
And I can do his act for a good 5 minutes easy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I fucking listen to him.
Yeah. And I could do most of your corn jokes. I can do most of your blue jokes.
Everybody can do my jokes.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, you host so many shows, so everyone has seen you a ton of times.
Right.
There's
a point where that's a bad thing and a good thing at the same time.
True. But I still never was really, really sure if I was wrong or not.
You're not wrong. To me, it sounds like...
And you know what? I could have... it's entirely possible. I simply misunderstood or misinterpreted her reaction to it.
And here's another thing. When I was a younger comedian, I might have had a problem with that.
Yeah.
Because when I was a younger comedian, I hoped the comedian that went before me ate shit so I looked better. Now that I'm a seasoned comedian, I'm like, I hope to God that guy does not eat shit because I do not want to go up to a cold room.
Yeah.
I want that guy to – because if a guy destroys, then I have to up my game.
Yeah.
And then I'm going on to a room that's hot.
Well, I mean, that's why nobody wants to be the first comic in the show because you're going up to a cold room. Now, but honestly, I'd rather go up at open mics. I'd rather go up first.
I'd rather go in the middle.
I don't want to accidentally end up going up right after some guy who just died. You know, that sucks.
And then here's the problem. The host of most open mics cannot recover from a guy who's just got up and ate shit, too.
Well, I've
the hardest job to me in comedy is being the host of an open mic.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have to do time in between people that you know suck.
Yeah, and, you know, you can... You can try to make a joke about one of their jokes, but...
Then you just sound like you're beating them up. Yeah, but then... Yeah.
Now that guy's already been kicked, and you're kicking
him. Yeah, and you got to walk the line, because you can do that, but you have to do it in such a way that you're being gracious to the comedian, because you want them to come back.
Yeah.
And you're being gracious to the crowd, because you want them to laugh at what you're saying. And it's a very thin line. And a lot of times it's the poke and apologize, like with a girl. You might have to poke fun at that comedian, and then right when you get off and introduce the next one and go, look, dude.
I didn't want to make fun of you, but look what you did.
I had to bring the crowd back.
Yeah.
You're doing a great job. It's so hard to get up in front of these people. Yeah. I was making fun of what you said, not at what you were doing, because what you were doing is valiant.
Well, you know, I haven't gotten to host shows very, very many times, but I always love doing it. And at the risk of sounding arrogant, I thought I did a pretty good job.
You have done a very good job. On the times I've put you on as host, you've done a very good job.
They did the one at Mother Mary's. It was in the back room,
and
a couple other times. So I wish I'd got the opportunity to do that a little bit more often because. But you know what? Really, the thing in comedy I think I need to practice the most is crowd work. Because I can't talk to the crowd. I can't. I see comics who can pick up. Oh, I'm gonna make fun of that guy's shirt and that guy's hat and this guy's mustache and I've never been able to. That's not
real crowd work.
Well,
because that's just picking up on
crowd work. Then
to me, because I and not to sound like a dick, I'm a well-written comedian. My act, I know exactly where I'm starting and I know exactly where it's going to end at some point. I know I can. My comedy's so well written, I can take this 3 minutes and move it to this 3 minutes and move this 2 minutes over here, but I know where it's going.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the most part, I've gotten lost several times. But there are a lot of comedians that write stuff that is just cues of, oh, that guy's wearing glasses, let me call him Harry Potter. That doesn't mean you're doing great crowd work.
So they
picked up.
They wrote. And
then the next time you see that comedian in a crowd, he picks on another guy with glasses. Doesn't look like Harry Potter, but people know who Harry Potter is.
Yeah.
The guy's got glasses. And okay, enough. Okay, it's enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not true crowd work. That's written material that you're pretending.
There's going to be someone in the audience with glasses.
So there's
going to
be somebody with
someone in the audience
funny
with a
hat.
Shirt. Yeah,
yeah. There's going to be somebody who is sitting there with their arms crossed and not laughing. That, to me, is not actual crowd work. That's just written material that you've switched. Because I've seen it this week.
Yeah,
I've watched the same comedian do the same thing with each crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all written. He knows he's going to do that.
Yeah,
what's the odds of a room with 50 people in it? Somebody's not going to have glasses on. Yeah. Somebody's not going to have a hat on.
Yeah, it's not real likely. Someone is going to have.
There's not going to be a girl with big tits. There's not going to be a blonde. I mean, you have it put in front of you.
Yeah.
And they've done enough time that they just wrote into their act, and that's what they're doing. Yeah. They're picking those out. I've actually seen a comedian fake hecklers where they're like, oh, what did you say? And then responds to a heckler that never happened. And it's disingenuous.
Yeah,
it makes a good show for the people that are watching it. And if you're a promoter and you're paying for it, hey, you're getting your money's worth.
Yeah.
But it's disingenuous. A true handling of... And here's the thing. There's a distinguishing between somebody who just gets so into your show that they spout something out, maybe one or two words. That's not a heckler to me. That's somebody that's so into what you're saying, they feel the need to say what's on their mind. They might not even know they're saying it out loud.
Yeah, yeah.
A heckler is a guy that's going, you're stupid, you're fucking idiot, get off the fucking stage. Somebody who's being derogatory. People who are... I had a guy tonight that defined one of my jokes. And I said, Swiss cheese is the most Christian. And he went, 'cause it's holy. And I looked at him and I said... Thank you, sir. That's one of the greatest heckles I've ever got. A definition to a joke that I would not define on stage.
Yeah.
You gave me the definition for. Thank you, sir, for that. He wasn't heckling. He got the joke.
Yeah.
He might not have gotten the three jokes I said beforehand.
That's true.
But he got that one. And he finally caught up and he was real. I know what this guy's doing.
Yeah.
Swiss cheese is holy. That's why it's the most Christian. I don't say it's why it's the most Christian. I hope you figure out because it's holy. I won't define it. He defined it for me. So that's not a heckle. A heckle is your cheese jokes blow ass, you stupid motherfucker. Yeah, get off the stage. Then you have to handle heckle.
Yeah.
The rest of it is just, it's busy work and it's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you start writing that busy work into your material and just... writing it into whatever audience you have, and you, to me, it's very disingenuous, and it's not what you want to do.
No. I've seen a number of acts come into town where they do 45 minutes of pre-written crowd work, I guess, like you're talking about. So you know, maybe I'm giving some people more credit than I should. But the fact remains that I would like to be better at crowd work.
Well, here's the thing, and it's a Rolodex in your head. A lot of times something works on stage when a heckler hits you, and you remember that for the next time that exact situation comes up.
Yeah.
So you know you go to that because you know it works.
Like the time that there was two people sitting in the front row, and I was like, so you're on a date, and the girl's like, this is my dad. Everyone is like, ooh, and I just blurted out... look, I'm not here to judge.
and you know that works for next time because it worked that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is not an improper way to handle a heckler. That is not even. It's not even a heckler.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't because even a heckler. I made a mistake.
Yeah. You actually.
And she called me out on it, and I flipped it around.
This is called the Bitter Comics Podcast, yes. Right? Can I get a few things off my chest? Because I've just had a few shows.
Absolutely, but we're going to take a break again real quick, and then we're going to...
This was good. This was good.
This is JT Foreman here with Danny Minch.
And Danny Minch, who's lost 10 pounds of stuff off his soul from the last few at minutes.
We are the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right back. This is JT Foreman here with Danny Minch. We're the Bitter Comics, and we're back. All right, let me go back one step real quick.
Okay,
I mentioned Joe Rogan earlier.
All right,
He's been on a he's been on the warpath against joke stealing.
It's the steroids,
and yeah, possibly. But something I want to say about Joe Rogan, I really appreciate that someone with a voice
does that.
I very much appreciate it, and I want to personally thank him.
Thank you, Joe.
I have been in the audience watching someone else do my joke.
Doesn't feel good.
And it does not feel good at all. And I have been in the audience watching someone famous do my joke and tell me after the show, look, you can either sell it to me for $50 or I can take it and do it anyways, and then you get nothing. And I would say his name if I wasn't sure I would get sued, so I'm not going to.
And you didn't take the money.
No, I did not take the money. I would rather keep my joke, honestly. $50 isn't enough.
Right.
You know, for me to give away a piece of myself.
Right.
But anyway, Joe Rogan, I do have to say this because I recognize when I look at Joe Rogan, I see the people who picked on me when I was in high school in his...
And here's the thing,
Joe Rogan. Enthusiasm about what he does.
Well, here's the thing, Joe Rogan was that guy who was getting picked on when he was younger.
Well, he is a bully. He is bullying people who deserve to be bullied, but he's a bully.
But go 15 years back and look at Joe Rogan. He was not this built.
Well, no, and you know that's it's.
He's a superhero.
It's his. I'm not saying he's a bad person, but. He is, and, you know, like I said, the people he's bullying deserve to be bullied, but that is how I see him. The one thing I do have to say is that I think he and Jay Mohr need to have a conversation, along with the person that he accused Jay Mohr of stealing the joke from, because when I heard Jay Mohr's side of the story, it sounds like he didn't really do anything wrong. So I think they need to talk it out. But the others, Carlos Mencia,
and
you know some others that he's brought up. Joe Rogan, sincerely, thank you.
But here's
you.
The thing with Carlos Mencia: he did it to Carlos Mencia's face.
Yes, he did,
and that's the difference between Jay Mohr. He did it. If he would have done Jay Mohr's face, and Jay Mohr could have defended himself then, it would have been a different.
And that's why he say that's why I refer to him as a bully.
Right,
he was not being. Although I guess you could say he was bullying Carlos Mencia if you wanted to, but I don't think that incident was bullying.
No,
I think that incident was calling out someone who was wrong. But the thing with Jay Mohr, I think that's bullying.
Yeah,
but
because they don't have a chance to defend themselves, that's when it's bullying.
Yeah, yeah.
When you've got six guys and you're beating up on somebody and they know they can't defend themselves because the other five guys are going to jump in.
Yeah,
that's bullying.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Thank you for the most part, Joe Rogan.
Yes, sincerely, but talk to Jay Mohr.
Yeah.
Just talk to him.
You guys get in a room with or without microphones. And
you know, you put it on your podcast.
Yeah.
You know, the Joe Rogan Experience. I think that's the name of his
podcast.
And
Jay Mohr has one also.
Oh, Jay Mohr does too?
Yeah, okay, he also does the sports thing.
Well, you know, you should do one of those crossovers, you know, like Hotel and the Love Boat used to do?
Yeah.
You know, have one of those crossover episodes where you do a 2-hour show, and the part one is on the Joe Rogan Experience, and part two is the Jay Mohr, and you know, do one of those.
Fantasy Island, Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, talk to Fantasy Island, Battlestar Galactica. I missed that one.
Yeah,
I missed that one.
Yeah, Buck Rogers like to, came in right at the end.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah,
I would too. All right, so you wanted to talk about some show experiences.
Here's the thing. I promote some shows, and I used to be one of the major promoters around here, and
yeah.
I have gotten way out of it. And thank goodness, because my comedy's done enough for me that I don't have to promote as many shows.
Yeah.
But I've made a lot of friends, and I've made a lot of people who want to make money from me. that want to pretend like they're my friends,
yeah,
and get on shows. And then I work with them as a comedian. I don't know how to get into this without sounding too dickish. So I guess it's the Bitter Comic Podcast.
Well, I mean, do you want me to tell you my my story about someone I thought dicked me over at a show?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, a couple. While I was out handing out flyers for the show I did at the Mercedes Edwards Theater last month,
right?
The owner of Martin's Bar, this guy's name is Mark. He asked to talk to me, and he asked me if I'd be interested in promoting a show there at his bar a week and a half after the day I was talking to him. The show was going to happen. And, you know, I was thinking a number of things. One, I don't really have enough time to promote the show.
No.
Two, this guy's not willing to give me a penny to help promote it at all. He said, well, let me have the flyer and I'll print it out and give them to you. And then his wife calls me a few days before the show and starts lecturing me about, well, you know, this is not very professional. You should be doing this and you should be doing this. And after I had agreed to do the show, I then found out that he had Chris Cruz doing a show at his bar the week before I was going to do mine. And, you know, so I told him, well, look, Chris Cruz has been doing this a lot longer than me. You probably have better results with him. You should go with him instead. You know, because I promoted one show in my life, and Chris Cruz has done lots and lots of them. And, you know, all the ones that I've been to have had lots of people there.
Yeah.
So he's apparently good at it, and he has good connections and probably a big following on Facebook of people who want to come to a show. So you should work with Chris Cruz instead. But he's like, no, I want to try this. And I told him I wanted $200 because I got to pay a comedian to come in. You're not going to get someone to come to LA for less than LA for less than $200. It's going to cost them $100 in gas.
All right.
So if you don't want to spend money, then that means
you don't want a real show.
You don't want a real show because I'll hire a local comedian who everyone in town has seen a dozen times, and you're going to run out of that real quick.
Real quick.
I mean, how many headliners live in Fresno? You can count them on a hand.
Four.
Yeah. So you're gonna run out of those real fast. So you don't want to use them at all, honestly.
Really?
This is gonna sound horrible to the comics in town who can headline, but
they're a really good feature.
You don't want to hire them because what if? I'll just use this name because it's someone from LA I know. What if Richard Villa calls you an hour before the show and says, dude, my car's broke down on 99, I'm not going to make it. Well, if you just had Terry Michaels the week before headlining, you can't
or featuring.
Call him in or featuring any of the other Kenny Thomas or yourself. I can't call or you Johnny now Osborne. If you headlined last week. Yeah, Johnny. You don't. Is
you gotta use it sparingly.
It's kind of a dickish thing to do to the local comics, but you don't want to use the local comics if you can avoid it because you might need them in an emergency. Now, I certainly wouldn't say, well, never hire a local comic because you don't want to do that to the people. But you don't want to start off with that if you can avoid it. But he didn't want to put a penny into it. He said, well, we'll charge a $5 admission, and the comics will get paid out of that. So, you know, just talk to your contacts and see if you can get someone who'd be willing to take a chance on possibly not making anything. And I'm like, all right, you don't really want a comedy show.
Yeah.
And I thought then, you know what, I should tell him no, never mind. And then when his wife called me the Sunday before the show and chewed me out, I should have canceled the show right then. So those are my fault. I should have said no at either one of those two incidents. But it comes to the day of the show. When I went in to pick up the flyers, he had 7 of them printed.
A whole 7?
7.
Okay.
Yes, he had so printed out 7 copies of it.
Guaranteed 3.5 people were going to show up to the
Absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Then I went I went and printed out some copies of it, which I should not have done.
No, you shouldn't have.
And, you know, before the show was the day before the rodeo was starting. So I went over to the rodeo grounds. All the people who were in town for the rodeo were, you know, they were setting up their stalls and everything. I handed flyers out there, went to the hotels in the area, walked around downtown for a couple hours and hand flyers out. But I didn't have enough time to promote it properly.
Right.
I knew that ahead of time, and I should have said no. But then he calls me a few minutes after the show was supposed to start. Only a couple people have shown up to see it. And he's like, well, we're not going to charge the admission, so if anyone wants to come in, just let them. I was like, okay, well, you know what? If you don't want to charge admission, that's fine. And I'm not going to ask you for anything for me, but you got to pay the comics I hired. Because I talked to Mike Wirtz, mm-hmm. and he said he would headline the show, and he would just take money from the door that got made. And what I told Mark was the first $100 that comes in the door is going to go to Mike Wirtz. The next 20 that comes in the door is going to go to the opener, Sean Boogie. And then after that, you and I will split whatever's left, if there is anything. And, you know, now the owner of the place is saying, well, we're not gonna charge any admission at the door. Just let people come in. I was like, okay, fine, you can do that. And you don't have to give me anything, but you got to pay the comics. If you're going to cancel charging the admission,
yeah, you've made that
decision, you got to pay them. And he's like, no, I'm not paying them anything. I said, okay, well, there's not going to be a show then. And so don't ever go to Martin's Bar in Clovis. Bobby Salazar's is right next door to it, and so is Old Town Saloon. Go to either of them instead.
I will.
And I'm saying that to all the audience as well. Please don't ever go to Martin's Bar. The guy's slime, in my opinion. So there. I have talked shit about someone that that I tried to work with. So it's whatever your situation was. Hopefully, it's less severe than that.
It's less severe, and it seems like a little benign now that you've done all that. I've been working with a headliner for the past 3 days, and somebody who I don't really I appreciate the effort he puts into comedy.
Yeah.
Look, you don't have to be funny to me for me to book you. You have to be funny to the audience for me to book you.
Let me pause for you for a second here, and let me say this. I hate country music.
Right.
Okay. I would never say Tim McGraw sucks.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people who love him.
Absolutely.
I don't. I hate broccoli. I would never say that broccoli should be destroyed.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people out there who like broccoli.
And
it's just that I don't like that.
And here's the thing. I promoted this guy.
I don't like it. There's nothing. This is not about you. It is about me and my preferences.
And that's exactly the. I've promoted this guy before. I've paid him. I've put him up in hotel rooms, given him meals, had him perform. He's done a good job.
The audiences were happy.
Well, I lost money on the show, but he got every penny that he was supposed to get
from
my shows, what he asked for. I put him in contacts with other promoters that I said, hey, this guy put on a show. People liked him. Then I ended up being a feature for him at another promoter show who I introduced him to. And he treated everybody in a nice way, but as a second-class citizen, like a disingenuous, nice way. And I honestly think the guy has basically a mental problem, like OCDs, because he reminds me very much of my ex-wife who had OCD. I was about to put a beer down on a table at one point that he had his merchandise, which he spends the last 20 minutes of his act hawking as part of his comedy act. Bye.
You know, the last 2 minutes
is fine.
Maybe even the last five.
Yeah, just say, hey, look, I've got my CD, I got some shirts.
Yeah.
Come by, say hi. Even if you don't buy anything, just come by and say hi. But that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I've done it. Yeah. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have merchandise I sell at the end of my shows when I headline. I have sold stuff.
We should record an album.
Yeah. I did. I had one stolen. Mm-hmm. I had a backpack full of DVDs, and honest to God, some of the worst quality DVDs you've ever seen.
Oh, okay.
And I would sell them for $5-$10, and they were worth about 75 cents a piece as a coaster.
There you go.
But, you know, yeah, when I went out there, I was putting my gas money out there and that kind of stuff, and the $300-$400 that they were giving me to go at however far I was going was covering, you know, gas and... You know,
maybe a burger.
My drinking and that kind of stuff, yeah. But it, by no means was I making a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah.
So anything that I can make on the side, fine. One show, my backpack full of DVDs were stolen, which is hilarious to me because they're not worth anything to anybody but me.
Yeah.
I could barely sell them, and I was the one promoting them.
Yeah.
But there's some guys that will. This guy spent 20 minutes promoting his own shit at the end of the show, which I don't. I really. Hey, we're a capitalist society. I don't have a severe problem with it. You do what you do to get by with what you need to do. I'm not going to do it because I don't believe in it.
Well, but. I don't think you can. I don't think you can really make a living doing comedy anymore unless you're also selling your crap.
Well, I think you can
until you get to the point where you're working.
But theaters. here's my thing. You know, you're not going to make a living. Selling crap until you get to that level anyway.
Well, I don't know if that's true because if you can come up with something
clever enough
that's worth buying. Like, yeah. You know, if you...
I made $60 in selling candy at one show.
Think about all of the one-liners you have.
Right.
And if you come up with one that's really great on a t-shirt.
And I have, but I've never made the t-shirt.
Yeah. So but if you just make a T-shirt that says Danny Mitch, the Blue Comedian, well, you're probably not going to sell a lot of those till you're famous,
right?
You know, once you're famous,
then I'm going to have a catalog. Blue Comedian
is going to.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who is featuring for you that has hired you on several occasions.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying don't kiss my ass. I don't want a kiss ass by any stretch of the imagination. Don't want that. I want somebody I can hang out with, somebody who's going to be my buddy. But I definitely don't want somebody who's going to be telling me, hey, get away from my stuff. You're going to mess up my merchandise.
Yeah.
This. Hey, you went 11 minutes instead of 10 minutes. That just cut into my time. These are the things you don't say. First off, I don't say to anybody. That's the promoter's job.
Yeah.
Not the headliner's job. The headliner's job is to come up there, and if they hire you to do 45 minutes, you do 45 minutes. If you give them an hour, that's on you.
Yeah.
You still get paid for the 45 minutes. If you do 45 minutes and you get off stage, you fulfilled your contract.
Yeah. And if the promoter puts someone up and they do 15 and now you only have enough time to do 40, well, hey, you get paid the same amount of money and you don't
absolutely.
Have to do as much
work. And if the promoter doesn't have a problem with it, why the fuck do you have a problem with it?
Yeah.
And how many times have you seen the feature kill and the headliner flounder?
A few.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
But it's happened.
Yeah.
And that's up to the promoter if he's going to let that feature keep going. Because he's like, that guy's got the audience. And maybe the next time I headline that guy, I'm going to sell more tickets. And when I take him from a feature and make him a headliner, I'm going to sell more tickets. So he gives him 3-4 more minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the headliner's spot to go up to a promoter and tell them how to run their show. It's not. You can give suggestions, but don't go up and tell them, hey, I want these guys to be on for 10 minutes, and I want them off. I want this to be done this way. I want this to be done that way. And that's the way it was. I had such a bad experience with that headliner over the last 3 shows. I will never, as a promoter, hire that headliner again. He's done. In my book, he's done. By the 3rd show, the promoter of the 1st show was the feature on the last 2 shows. I'm almost guaranteeing we'll never hire that headliner on any of his shows again.
Well, there was a comic that I went on the road with a couple times when I was up in Seattle. His name is Jerry Percio. One of the nicest guys I ever met, and he gave me a lot of really great advice when we were out on the road about, you know, one thing that he did was he had these notebooks where it had the name of the waitresses and the manager of every club that he played. And he did a lot of triple runs. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I am very, very familiar. I worked with Scott Shields a lot.
So we'd go to Miles City, Montana, and he'd open up his notebook. We'd walk in the bar, and he'd look at it. And owner of the bar is John. Hey, John, how's it going? Good to see you again, man. Yeah, you know, last time I was here, about 9 months ago, he kept track of stuff like that. So, you know, he's like walking in and talking to old friends. I don't think you have to go that far as he did.
But that's not a bad thing.
You can't don't burn your bridges. You know, why? Someone might be following you, so you have to burn your bridges?
Yeah.
Who's
falling off the bridge when you're burning it?
Yeah, you got to at least be pleasant to the people, because, you know, you should be nice to everybody, because you never know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you never know what's going to happen next. You never know what situation you're going
to
be in.
And that's where me and you differ, because I'm the kind of guy that gets to a certain point where I'm like, I don't fucking care who you are. I don't care if my career is going to be destroyed because I'm calling you a dickhead. Uh-huh. You're a dickhead.
Yeah, well, I'm just oblivious.
Yeah, and I will just be like, okay, I'm done with you. I don't care if I never work another day in my life because I'm burning my bridge with you. Because this, see, to me.
Well, no, I mean, it seemed like he was doing that. It's like
I know he was doing that. And my fiance actually told me today, be very careful because. You're not, and I'm not. I'm not to the level this guy is. This guy headlines probably 50% of the shows he goes up on.
Yeah.
If not more.
And the other half are showcases.
Yeah, and I headline once every few months.
When you book yourself.
No, not only that.
I'm kidding.
But once every few months, I headline a show. Yeah. And which is amazing to me because people want to listen to my shit for that long, but I'm the kind of guy that's like, okay, I would rather not have anything to do with you and not have any opportunity. But it turns out the people that I so far have burned bridges with would have never done anything for me in the first place because they're so self-involved. They don't give a fuck. They will never mention another comedian they've worked with that has done good. Because they are so afraid that they're going to lose work for their own self.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Most promoters, at the very most, are going to book you every 6 months. Yeah. At the most.
Yeah.
Once a year if you're doing good.
Yeah. You won't end up performing at the same place. Yeah.
What's the problem of telling that promoter of the other guys that are really good that would do great at your room? There's no harm in that whatsoever, just as long as they keep bringing you back every 6 months or a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get enough guys, you get 12 guys that will bring you back every year eventually, you've got a booked schedule.
Yeah. Well, and that's the kind of thing Jerry Persio would say is, you know, if you act like that and then, you know, because that kind of thing, it ends up spilling over. It's if you end up being a jerk to the other comics on the show, you're gonna slip and be a dick to the owner of the club that you're performing at,
or the promoter,
or they're gonna hear you. Or they're gonna happen to be standing by nearby and hear you do something like that.
The guy,
it only takes, you know, if you do 20 shows for a person in 20 different places, you know, some promoter who books a whole bunch of places all over, you do 20 shows for him. It only takes the manager of one of those bars or restaurants to call the promoter and say, yeah, don't ever send this dude again.
Okay.
And now he's not going to send you back to anything.
And here's the problem with that. This guy now is trying to run every show he's at, and it's not his position to run the show.
Well, a lot of headliners would disagree with you on that point, though.
Well, they're wrong.
Well,
you get paid for what you do.
I agree. Unless you promoted the show yourself.
Yeah.
It's not yours. You're a hired gun.
You can complain about it. That's fine.
Yeah.
But don't make demands.
Yeah.
Complaining is what. And here's the thing. There's a way to complain that doesn't even sound like complaining. Hey, guy, you know, next time you do this show, here's some suggestions that might help you out with the show.
Yeah. Well, it's like the show I did at the Mercedes Edwards Theater, the headliner, Tom Clark. He didn't really ask me for anything. You know, he didn't demand anything. He didn't even ask me how much time the other comics were doing. He asked me how much time I expected him to do.
Yeah.
And honestly, I told him, well, we got to be out of here by 9. So finish so that we can be out of the building by 9 o'clock. Other than that, I honestly didn't care. It just doesn't matter. And he said, okay, no problem. And you know what? The house manager was turning the lights off and locking the door at 9 o'clock,
which is a dick move too.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. True. Also,
and let's bring it down to a local level. I thought the show you ran was really great. Yeah. I've ran some shitty shows.
Yeah. Well, I paid the headliner too much money. I didn't really think about that.
Don't worry about that. I'm not talking about dollar cents.
The show was good.
Right.
The show was great. I could have done a better job promoting it, and I paid the headliner too much, and that's why I lost a whole bunch of money on it. But the show was great. It really was.
And see, where me and you differ is I started small, was booking myself and my friends at little places and working my way up, whereas you started big and then you're kind of working.
Well, honestly, there's two reasons why I started the Mercedes Edwards Theater. Actually, we're gonna take a break again real quick. This is JT Foreman. I'm here with Danny Minch with the Bitter Comics, and we'll be right
back.
Danny Minch the.
Yes.
Danny Minch, comma the.
The. Yes. That's.
We're the Bitter Comics. We're Bitter Comics, comma the.
Yes. The.
And we'll be back right or something. This is JT Foreman here with Danny Minch. We're the Better Comics, and we're back. All right, we're already 11 minutes over the 1 hour. So let me just say that this real quick. The reason I wanted to do the show at the Mercedes Edwards Theater, I mean, booking your first show, you probably shouldn't do a theater.
No.
With 750 seats. I did the show there for two reasons. One, I went to school at Clark Intermediate, where that theater is at. I always liked the theater, and when I started doing comedy, one of my goals was to one day do a show at the theater at my old junior high. So that was why I wanted to do it at Mercedes Edwards. And the second reason is because so many of the bars and restaurants that I went to talk to them about doing a show there, they are either were or had done shows with another promoter in town. And I want to avoid pissing in someone else's pot. It's like I wouldn't ever go to Mother Mary's and ask them to let me do a comedy show unless I talk to you about it first, because you book shows there.
Right.
And in fact, that's one of the reasons that I'm so upset about what happened with Martin's Bar, is because I didn't know until after I'd agreed to do the show that Chris Cruz was booking a show there the week before. And although I could be, I'm probably over, I'm probably overanalyzing, but I feel like Chris doesn't like me. And
Chris doesn't like you because you're another comic.
Well, that's entirely possible. But I don't want to give him a legitimate reason to not like me. Right. And you know what? Taking someone else's venue like that is a legitimate reason to not like someone.
Absolutely a legitimate reason.
And, you know, so if that's that. No one is doing a show at the Mercedes Edwards Theater.
Right.
And that is the biggest thing that attracted me to that possibility. And so that's why I did there. But I do want to have a longer conversation about the show because of a lot of reasons. But we don't have time here now. I'll talk about it on the next episode.
I'm going to go through just some real quick things real quick. Fresno Area Comedy, you need to step up your game real quick. Quit booking the same people at the same shows every freaking time. Quit putting 17 comics on a show. Let's up the comedy game a little bit in this area. Two, why do you have two plungers in your bathroom? It's not one plunger enough. What the fuck are you doing in there that you have to have two plungers? I mean, one plunger, I can understand. You've got some shit problems. I get that. Well, two plungers, what the fuck is going on in that toilet?
One of those plungers I bought at the dollar store.
Okay.
The day I moved into the
And it doesn't work.
I went to the dollar store and I bought a whole bunch of things for $1 each, and that was one of them. Okay. And it's a crappy plunger that doesn't work worth
But you can throw it away.
You know what? I didn't think of it. You know, so it was like, okay, I need to get a better plunger. I went to a store and got a good plunger, but I didn't throw the old one
away. Yeah, go ahead and throw that one away. Yeah.
You're right.
And two, you have the same beard trimmer I have, but on the move to my new place with my fiance, I lost all the guards. So every time I come over to your house, it's my conscience is bothering me so bad because every time I go to the bathroom, I want to steal your beard guards.
No,
I do. I don't do it.
It's mine.
I don't do it, I want to steal your beard guards.
Stay away from my beard trimmer.
But here's the thing. This is how shitty of a person I am. Yeah. I'm thinking of buying an exact duplicate of that at like Target.
Yeah.
And then
taking the beard guard out and then returning it. Hey, there's stuff missing.
Yes, getting my money back because Target fucked me over the other day with another product. So
when I was like 12 or 13, I was tired of playing combat on the Atari 2600.
How could you get tired of that?
I don't know. So I went to the store.
There's airplanes and jet planes.
I bought a new game. I don't remember what it was. I took it home and unscrewed the screws to open it up. I took the card, you know, the circuit card out of combat, put it back in, closed it, and then returned that game just saying, oh, I just didn't like it, and I got my money back, and now I have the new game, but it's in the combat. Because I wanted to get a different game. I didn't want combat anymore. And
you know, felt bad about it for the rest of your life.
No, actually, I don't. I don't feel bad. Oh, okay. I know I should, though.
You should, because I would have felt bad. Because some guy's sitting there going, "I want the new Pac-Man game, but I'm playing shitty combat right now."
They bought.
But Pac-Man really, if you think back of it right now,
I think it was Miss Pac-Man.
Okay, really, if you think back of it right now, nobody's playing any of those games.
That's true. Anyway, you know, a lot of people ask me why Tom Clark was the comedian I hired, and he was someone clean. I wanted to do an all-ages show. I originally wanted Brad Upton.
And Danny Minch. I was too busy.
I got Kenny to host because I thought it was funny to have a black guy host the show in Clovis because everyone makes fun of how there's no minorities in Clovis. Just that amused me, I guess. And Terry's a good friend. We hang out all the time, so I asked him to open or to feature, and then I did a few minutes.
And how many shows of Terry? Kenny Thomas got you on. Kenny Thomas has gotten you on no shows whatsoever.
Here's the real reason. That amused me. Here's the real reason I hired Terry Michaels.
No, Terry, I have no problem with it. I was meaning Kenny.
The real reason I hired Terry Michaels is because he owed me $135 from like a year and a half ago. And so I was like,
you're not the only promoter he owes money to.
You could do the show, and I'll erase your debt. And so I paid him that he doesn't have to pay me the $135.
There's another comedian that has to do the same thing. I think that happened with another one, actually.
Anyway, so what? Where were we before we left?
I think we're closing the show out. Right.
All right. Well, hey.
Because you got to take me home.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm drunk.
You got any shows coming up you want to plug? I mean,
I got
the guys listening to this podcast.
Yeah, I got Flip Schultz coming up on the 26th.
I love Flip.
I do too. And Allison, his wife, is coming down. Well, one of the guys I was talking about,
pretty awesome,
who I stole one of the jokes from, who got me on stage. And he's so upset about it. He's coming to another show with me.
Mother Mary's.
Mother Mary's on the 26th. He'll be at O'Sullivan's on the 27th, and then we have a special performance of Skippy Green going to be on the 28th of July at Fulton 55.
All
right. Skippy Green is an old style lounge comedian who's very vulgar. So not for the timid. Okay. The things he says are very obscure. Very raunchy and very, very funny. I'm not a big fan of the raunch, but I'm a big fan of things done intelligently. And this is one of the guys that does raunch intelligently, so that's why I hired him. Me and actually Dave Fedoroff are co-producing that show at the Fulton 55, which is a character-driven show. Alison Weber will be opening on that show, so it might give you an idea who Skippy Green might be with the other two shows that are being booked beforehand.
Yeah.
But Skippy Green, he's been on Last Comic Standing, and he's hilarious.
Cool.
So that's all I've got coming up. I promote about 3 months out, and then I try not to worry about it.
Yeah. I personally don't have anything coming up because no one's booking me. So there you go.
And if no, you're that's not my own fault. If you're not getting booked in the Fresno area, you're doing something right.
Yeah, probably. Thanks a lot for coming to do the show.
Hey, man, I had a great time.
And I am JT Foreman here with my good friend Danny Minch.
The
Danny Minch.
Danny Minch the.
I am the Bitter Comic, and I will talk to you again next week. Peace.
Peace.